In just a week, we'll reach the 28th of Iyar, Yom Yerushalayim. So in preparation for Yom Yerushalayim, let's study about Yerushalayim. First, about the day of the liberation of Yerushalayim, the reunification of Yerushalayim during the Six-Day War in 1967 on the 28th of Iyar. It was 19 years after 1948. It was 19 years after the establishment of the state. And the war hadn't been won yet. It was in the middle of the war, but it was the day in which they freed Yerushalayim. Now, one of the great authors of that period of time, you may have heard of him, his name is not alive anymore, was Rav Elio Ki Tov, and he authored the Sefer HaTodaah, which has been translated into English as the Book of the Heritage. So he has a paragraph, more than one paragraph, I would say an essay, about the 28th of Iyar, since he goes through the entire calendar. And of course, when he gets to the month of Iyar, he points out that although we don't have any official holidays in the Torah during the month of Iyar, we have two modern holidays, contemporary holidays, the 5th of Iyar and the 28th of Iyar. He spends a lot of time trying to understand the relationship between those two days, but I'd like to read to you some of the paragraphs that he wrote. We have an English translation of the Book of Heritage. I'm sure we have it here in the library. And he describes what went on before, during, and after the Six-Day War. He speaks about the fact that the Arab armies schemed to wipe out the seed of Israel from the land of Israel. And they sieged the borders of Israel on all sides. And this was lifted during the Six-Day War. He points out that 2 days before the war broke out, what happened was, surrounding the borders of Israel were the armies of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, compiling about 200,000 troops that were well supplied by Russia with the most sophisticated armed weapons of the time. And the enemies of the people of Israel declared, "We are set upon destroying the Jewish state, on murdering all its inhabitants. They will have no escape. We will come to them with great force from the south, from the east, from the north. We will drown them in the sea on the west." And the people of Israel were in a state of fright. Many graves were dug, because in the Holocaust we didn't have the chance to bury our dead. So here we wanted to be prepared. Probably 10,000 graves were dug. Then Rav Ki Tov says the following: "Their plan was not meant to be. The army of Israel, though greatly outnumbered, destroyed the besieging armies and seized vast stretches of enemy-held territory. On the 26th of Iyar, the war began and ended on the 2nd of Sivan with the thundering roar of when the thundering roar of battle ceased. During the 6 days, Israel was victorious in all of her engagements, achieving all of her objectives. They defended and saved the people of Israel and drove its enemies back deep in their own lands. Although the 28th of Iyar does not mark the end of all fighting, it is still marked as a day of thanksgiving and celebration because of the wonders, the nisim, the miracles God showed us in that war, and because of the reunification of Yerushalayim, which took place on that day. That was the crowning achievement of the Six-Day War." He goes on to describe how Yerushalayim was recaptured, how the enemies were destroyed. He speaks about the fact that early in the war, Jordan had not yet entered into the war. But they received a message from the Egyptian officers who, while running for their lives, leaving soldiers behind, leaving shoes behind, sent a message to Jordan that it had killed the Israeli soldiers or imprisoned them. So therefore, the king of Transjordan promised that he would not spare any blows. And therefore, God strengthened his heart. Like we say, Vayachbed Hashem Eslev Paro. There was a great miracle, and Jordan joined the war. This was a clear act of divine intervention that drove the troops of the kingdom of Transjordan into a war of madness. It was an act of God which restored to the children of Israel the cities in the lands of Yehudah and Shomron, and most important, the holy city of Yerushalayim. On the third day of battle, the 28th of Iyar, came the historic announcement, Yerushalayim v'yadeinu, Harabayis v'yadeinu, and the shofar was heard proclaiming that never again will we depart from this holy place, Kein Yeratzon. The joy of Jews throughout the world ascended to the heavens. Many of you may have heard stories or may have had personal experiences after the liberation of Yerushalayim. I want to share with you two of those stories in just a moment, but first, to finish with Eliyahu Kitov, he writes that at this point in the war, following the second day, the Israeli armies took to the task of capturing territories of the land of Israel in all remnants of enemy resistance. They turned towards the north, towards the Syrian foes. They struck at their mighty fortifications on the mountains of Golan, from which they had fired mercilessly upon Israeli settlements in the Galil. The Israelis drove them to the gates of Damascus, and at that point they ceased fighting, because the time for the covenant of Avram from the river of Egypt to the river Euphrates, had not yet arrived. On the day of Shabbat, the second of Sivan, 6 days after the war had begun, quiet returned to the land. The wondrous deliverance on the 28th of Iyar, the day of Yerushalayim, and the days following, transcends by far in scope and in character many other historical events which gained a unique standing in the Jewish calendar. So from the perspective of Rav Kitov, there's no question that the 28th of Iyar deserves to be marked as a day of celebration on the Hebrew calendar. It is by far miracles that transcend in their utter significance all the miracles that took place before. He goes on to discuss the halachic position regarding the 28th of Iyar. And he says that unfortunately he bemoans the fact that there's no clear-cut, absolutely agreed-upon position amongst the poskim. But nevertheless, he reiterates at the end of this long piece how important this event was in Jewish history. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik used to say that in the aftermath of the war in 67, many Jews who were hesitant, who were inhibited about identifying as Jews in many countries, especially in the United States, openly identified as Jews. They came back and they were proud of the fact that they were Jewish. I mentioned to you that I would like to share with you two stories. One story is about a Jew by the name of Yoska Schwartz. Yoska Schwartz was there at the time that they unified Yerushalayim. Yoska Schwartz, otherwise known as Balagan Schwartz, was a person who always did declare with regard to religious Jews, I'm not like them. I'm a new Israeli man. I don't belong to the same group as religious Jews. However, on the day in which Yerushalayim was reunified, Yoska appears at the Kotel. And when he gets to the Kotel, and this is his own words, When I got to the Kotel, I understood that I was just a Jew. I wasn't a Jew that's not like them, but just a Jew. And it was an amazing feeling. For the first time in his life, Yoska Schwartz identified with the entire corpus of Knesset Yisrael, of the entity, the nation of the Jewish people. And he concludes his words by saying that when he was in front of the Kotel, he felt Yerushalayim. He actually felt Yerushalayim in a tangible way. I want to tell you another story. And this story, my father was one of the rabbis from the Rabbinical Council of America who came immediately at the end of June, or maybe it was the beginning of July, after the Six-Day War. And he relates the following story. Perhaps you've heard it, but it bears repetition. On the following day, after they reunified Yerushalayim and the Kotel, a Jew was found in the afternoon, around Mincha time, reciting a bracha with Shemu Malchus, with God's name, Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Zokef Kifufim. And when his friends heard them, they said to him, "What is going on here? That's a bracha they recite in the morning, not in the afternoon." And he explained that when the Kotel fell into the hands of the Jordanians, I took upon myself a vow never to stand straight. And today, my vow is no longer binding. I can stand straight and tall. Hence, I recited the bracha, Zokef Kifufim, you have straightened those who are bent over. This story indicates what the days of ER are all about. It bothers me not right now whether you say halal with a bracha, without a bracha, and the 50 different possible answers, but that you recognize that Yerushalayim is in our hands. You recognize that for the first time in so many years, perhaps in 2,000 years, we can stand up straight and tall because Yerushalayim is ours. I want to tell you another couple of stories, because I don't know if you're in the mood to hear stories. I am, in any event. I want to share with you a story that the chief rabbi, the former chief rabbi of England, Rabbi Yonasan Sacks, tells on the weekend before he took over his position as the chief rabbi. He and his wife Elaine were in Israel. Little did they know, it was in 1991, that when they came to Israel, the Gulf War would break out. And on Shabbat, he says that when the Gulf War ended, we were in a neighborhood called Yamin Moshe. And we climbed to a higher point. Again, Yamin Moshe is mostly underground, but you can climb to a higher point, and we watched the sunset. And as the sun was setting, we heard the singing, beautiful voices, in an apartment somewhere in Yamin Moshe. And we decided to gravitate towards this place to hear what was going on. As it turns out, it was a group of Romanian Jews who had just made Aliyah that week, and this was their first Shabbat. They had a choir, and they were singing in honor of Yerushalayim. Not only did the rabbi and his wife gravitate to hear the beautiful melodies of these Jews, but he says that Jews came by the droves from all over Yamin Moshe. They felt a certain gravitational pull to come and hear the beautiful songs. He gives a list of countries that were represented at that moment, as Shabbat ended: America, Canada, Australia, South Africa, Eastern Europe, and the Arab lands. He says at that moment in his life, he calls it an epiphany, which changed his life, he had a vision that what he was seeing in front of his eyes was the fulfillment of the prophecy of Yirmiyahu HaNavi 2,600 years earlier. The prophet Yirmiyahu said that a time will come when we will not thank God for bringing us out of the land of Egypt, but rather for bringing our people together from all the lands in the earth. The second Exodus, the ultimate redemption. Yirmiyahu describes the events that will take place at that time those miraculous events. We live to see on this day when Jews have come to Israel from so many different countries. He calculates 103 countries speaking 82 languages came to Israel to build not just their own lives, but to build the state of Israel, the Jewish homeland. So it took 26 centuries to see the beginning of the fulfillment of the Nevuah, the prophecy of Yeshayahu Anovi regarding Yerushalayim. This was the Yerushalayim that brought together Jews from all over the world as one people, in one voice, singing one song. I think this is a fabulous story because I think it reveals the secret of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is a city which gathers together Jews from all over the earth. And this is a fulfillment of the divine prophecy through his Nevi'im. Now I want to point out to you, I don't have the pasuk in front of me, but in last week's parasha, we don't have a blackboard here, but it says about the Jewish people returning to the land, it says, Teshvu el admasam, they will return to their land. Parshas Bahar, last week. The word Teshvu is written without, I'm sorry, start again. The word Tashuvu, is written Teshvu without a Vav. Very unusual that the Vav is omitted. Now, if you could take the word Tashuvu without a Vav, what you end up with, Taf and Shin is 700, and then you add the Beis and the Vav, which is another 8, and if you add the Vav, you get 714. This is really interesting because the Hebrew calendar is always determined by a certain number, and then you add the Hey, 5,000. Well, the year 5,714 is equivalent to the year 1948, when we returned to establish our homeland in Israel. But he says, why is the Vav omitted in the Torah? In other words, you have the Kriya and the Ksiv, so we can calculate it with the Vav, but yet it's written without the Vav. So I thought I can answer this question, and I'm laughing a little because this is not usually how you should answer a question, but by telling you another story that Rabbi Sacks tells. He says the following, that he came to Yerushalayim just a few years ago on the 28th of Iyar in order to participate in the celebrations of Yom Yerushalayim. Standing on the streets of the city, I watched as youngsters from all around the world waving Israeli flags were singing and dancing with joy, and I was overwhelmed with emotion. Why was I so overwhelmed? I was overcome with emotion because of the 6 million who were murdered, amongst them 1.5 million children, who during the Shoah were liquidated and could not be part of this celebration. But then I began to remember, he says, the prophecy of Yechezkel. Once again, we're talking more than 25 centuries ago. Yechezkel had a vision of the Jewish people reduced to the valley of dry bones. And Hashem raised the question, shall these bones live again? And in front of Yechezkel's eyes, his prophetic eyes, he saw them come together, take on flesh, begin to breathe, and live again. Hashem had promised Yechezkel that he would open the people's graves and bring them back to the land. And here, we were seeing in front of our eyes the children of Israel coming out of the graves of the Shoah, coming back to their land. It was an amazing experience. He goes on to think about the great empires of the world the Egyptian pharaohs, Assyria, Babylon, the Alexandrian Empire, the Roman Empire, medieval empires, the Crusaders of Christianity, Islam, all the way to the Third Reich and the Soviet Union, the superpowers of their day, who bestrode the world like a colossal giant, seemingly invulnerable in that time, and each tried to write the obituary of the Jewish nation. And whilst they were all consigned to history, our people can still stand, rejoice, and sing, Am Yisrael Chai. Pretty amazing. So the Jews come together in Yerushalayim. I have in front of me a book that's called Otsar Haggadah. I don't know if you're familiar with it. And what he does is, topically, he anthologizes statements from Shas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, and Midrashim. And I looked over what he would have on Yerushalayim. I was amazed. He has 7 pages of quotes from Chazal. He just quotes like half a line from a Gemara about Yerushalayim. Over 200 quotes. And I think if we would, again, it took me a long time to go through these quotes, but if we were to isolate a few of them, I think we could begin to appreciate what Yerushalayim is all about. He has a Gemara in Masechta Bava Metzia. The Gemara says, Yerushalayim, David HaMelech says, Habnuya ki'ir shechubra layachdav. It's a city that integrates, mechaberes, says the Gemara, mechaberes es Yisrael zelazeh. It connects the Jewish people one to the other. This is what David HaMelech had in mind when he said, ir shechubra la yachdav. It's very interesting that the Gemara Baba Basra talks about the Anshei Yerushalayim. They had very special customs in Yerushalayim. And the Gemara goes through many of them. One of them catches my eye. The Yerushalayim people would set up a sign on their doorpost that would indicate that guests are invited to join them. Hayuparsim Prusa, Mapa Prusa. They had a certain flag, so to speak, a cloth that they would stretch out over their door. And when it was stretched out, when it was open, it was a message of Orchim Nichnasim, the guests would come in. The doors are open. If it was moments of intimacy or when the family had to go to sleep, then they didn't put out the Mapa Prusa. You know, think about this in contemporary times. Think about Yerushalayim today. How much Achnasas Orchim is going on in Yerushalayim? Just to mention one little factor, I'm not talking about all the organizations that do Achnosis Orchim, but just one thing that always excites me is a program that's run by the IDF, by Tzahal, called Nativ. Have you heard of it? The Nativ program is for Russian inducts into the Israeli army whose Jewishness in terms of halakha is questionable. And they offer a Nativ program for any Russian who volunteers to be part of the program. It's free of charge for any soldier. And what they do is for a period of 6 to 12 months, they organize home hospitality for Shabbatot in religious families in Yerushalayim so that these Jews can become full-fledged Jews as they get excited by seeing what a Shabbat family meal is all about. So that this expression of Yerushalayim, Ki'ir Shechubra Lo Yachtov, represents the unity of the people of Israel. And here I would like to share with you a fascinating insight of Rabbi David Gottlieb. Does anybody know David Gottlieb? I don't know if he lectures here. I think he does. And he asks the following question: why is it that in the same week that we read Parshas Noso, that's this year here in Israel, we initiate Chaf Chet Iyar. So for example, a week from today is going to be the 28th of Iyar on a Sunday, and the following Shabbos we're going to read Parshas Noso. What is the connection, perhaps, because we always believe that there's a deeper connection between the Parsha and what happens and what commemorations we have during the week that precedes that Parsha. So in order to answer this question, he addresses the famous question of the Ramban. The Ramban, in his super commentary on the Torah for Parshas Noso, asks the question that all the commentaries ask, but he offers a very unique answer. Why is it that in Parshas Noso, half of the Parsha, a tremendously large chunk of psukim, I never counted them, repeat over and over again what the gifts of the respective princes of the Shvatim were? It's the identical gift given by every single Nasi of every single Shevet. Again, if you're a Baal Kori, it's a boon, because you only have to learn one Aliyah and then you know most of the Parsha. But why did the Torah waste so much ink on repeating? Why couldn't the Torah just say, and every Nasi brought the same, ditto, ditto? So Ramban offers a very unique answer. And he suggests that even though the princes brought the identical karban, nevertheless, that's only in content, meaning externally, on the outside. But internally, in terms of the essence of the karban, the kavana, the intention, each one of the princes has his own unique meaning and his own intention. So for example, Yisachar brings his karban al shem HaTorah, because Yisachar are going to be the shevet that's dedicated to teaching Torah. And we're going to find that Yehuda is going to bring his karban for the sake of Malchus, because he's going to represent Malchus. And so forth and so on. Every shevet in his essence, in his personality and character, will bring his karban, identical externally to the karban before and after, but nevertheless unique in the kavanah. And Rabbi Gottlieb points out that perhaps herein lies the connection to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is an amazing city, Ke'ir Shechubra Lo Yachtov, like a city that joins together Israel within itself. What we have in Yerushalayim is something very special. Why is it that Yossi, that we said before, feels special about Yerushalayim? The answer is because Yerushalayim means that every single Jew is special. And we come together to form one entity, indivisible, one whole, one gestalt. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Because Yerushalayim is the integration of every single individual Jew with his kavana, with his personality. And that's what the Six-Day War was all about, to bring together Jews. Ke'ir shechubra lo yachtov. This is the power of Yerushalayim, to bring us together. I found another insight, which I think bears on what we're talking about, in the name of Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, who quotes a Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin says the following: Yud, meaning 10 kabim, measures of Yofi, yardu liolam, fell from the heavens. Tes, 9 out of 10, Natla Yerushalayim. Unbelievable. Yerushalayim takes 9 out of 10 of the beauty of the entire world. What is this beauty and how can we appreciate it? There's a chapter at the end of Sefer Shmuel that almost defies comprehension. David HaMelech takes a census of the Jewish people. Yoav, his commander-in-chief, spends almost a year in organizing that census. As a result of the census, they calculated that Israel was made up of 800,000 men who were capable of going out to the war, and Shevet Yehuda, together with Binyamin, were made up of 500,000 men. In the aftermath of this census, a terrible magefa breaks out, a devastating plague that killed 70,000 people. And the question that's asked is, the Torah itself demands a census. Not this Shabbos, this coming Shabbos, actually, right? We're going to read Parshas Bamidbar. And in Parshas Bamidbar, the Torah opens up the Parsha by saying, take a census of all the congregation, the children of Israel, by their families, by their fathers' houses, Lebeis Avosam. If the Torah itself commands us to take a census, how could David HaMelech be guilty of a sin when he takes a census? Rashi says at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, the reason for the census is an expression, a divine expression of the intimacy, the concern, the love that God has for every last Jew. Just like you would count the star, if you're an astronomer, you would count each star and its beauty. So too God takes out the people of Israel as His stars, and He wants to count them because of His love for them. So if the census is something positive and expressing the divine love, why does it bring about such a terrible, devastating magefa? And the answer, he says, based on the Malbim and others, is that David HaMelech's census was fundamentally different. David HaMelech wanted to find out, what were the relative numbers of soldiers amongst Israel and Judah and the tribe of Yehuda? His census achieved the exact opposite of what a census is made to be and meant to be. His census exposed division in Israel, separated between the relative strength of Yehuda comparison to the other tribes of Israel. This census, instead of bringing the Jewish people together, serves to divide. Instead of uniting the people, it splits them. And as a result, we suffer the consequences of a plague. And David HaMelech finally does tshuva, and he understands the role of a census and what it's meant to be. Not to separate between the Shvatim and Yehudim Binyamin, but rather to bring them together. Thus, David HaMelech does tshuva, and the plague ceases. I found a very fascinating Gemara here, which is quoted in this book that I mentioned to you before, about where is Yerushalayim? Where is it located? Is it in the Shevet of Binyamin? Is it in the Shevet of Yehuda? So the Gemara says in Masechta Sukkah, that Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, that David HaMelech took money, he collected money from all the shvatim, and he used that money, earmarked it to buy the Goren Arnona, that threshing for where they would build the Beis HaMikdash. The ground of the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim belongs not to a particular Shevet, but to all of Israel. Once again, I think this reflects the idea of Ke'ir Shechubro LeYachtov. There's got to be a Yachtov. There's got to be integration of all of Klal Yisrael. We cannot have a tug of war. I remember reading in American history when I was a kid that they were trying to decide where they should establish the capital of the United States. And they decided upon Washington, D.C. Why? Because this was not part of the original division between the Union and Confederate soldiers. It's really interesting. That was like a neutral zone. So we had a civil war in, 1864, whatever year it was. And it divided the people of America into two fighting armies. But on the Potomac, there was an area called D.C., which was designated. So too, Yerushalayim doesn't belong to any particular Shevet. It's a part that's Kechubro LeYachtov, Lo Nischalko LeShvatim. It's going to be a unification, Ke'ir Shechubro LeYachtov, for all Shvatim. John F. Kennedy, as you all know, used to say, ask not what your country could do for you, but what you could do for your country. Ask not what Jerusalem could do for you, but what you could do for Yerushalayim. Well, let me begin by telling you what Yerushalayim could do for you. And then we'll answer the question, what you could do for Yerushalayim. I have here in front of me one of the most important works of the 20th century, going into the 21st century, called the Encyclopedia Talmudit. And here too I found pages and pages dedicated to Yerushalayim. But here he speaks about Chashivuta shel Yerushalayim. What can Yerushalayim do for you? And he says, Yerushalayim is a makom tefillah. All our prayers are directed towards Yerushalayim three times a day. If we're in Chutz Laretz, we direct our prayers towards Yerushalayim. Why is Yerushalayim a makom tefillah? Because Yaakov Avinu declares when he wakes up from his sleep, Manora Mokom Azeh Ein Zekim Beis Elokim Vizeh Shar Hashamayim. This place, Yerushalayim, where I went to sleep, is the house of God and the gates of heaven. And the Gemara tells us in Masecht Brachos that Mikan, from here, we should derive the conclusion that if Yerushalayim is the gates of heaven, we should face towards Yerushalayim, at least emotionally, we should face towards Yerushalayim in our intent. The Pirkei d'Rav Elezer adds a few words here. And it's quoted here in the encyclopedia. The Pirkei d'Rav Elezer says the following. Yerushalayim hi shar hashamayim, Visham, over there, the Shar HaShamayim, Pasuach, Lishmo Es HaTefillah. So I was very excited to find out that the gates of heaven are open. Because my father once was in the South in America with a group of his companions, and it was Mincha time. I don't remember where they were, somewhere in Virginia, I think, and they were looking for a shul to daven in. So somebody told them that there's a shul called Shar Yerushalayim. So they went, Shari Shamayim, excuse me. So they finally got there just in time for Mincha, except that there was a big sign and it said, gates of the heaven are closed for the summer. So that it's really important that the Pirkei d'Rav Elezer points out that the gates of Yerushalayim are open for Atfilos. And we could always be mispalel in Yerushalayim. So first and foremost, Yerushalayim is a makom tefillah. What else does Yerushalayim inspire? The Gemara says in Masechta Baba Basra that before Yoshua ben Gamal established what we call compulsory education, a chadorim system, the need for it was because the fathers would take their sons up to Yerushalayim to study Torah in Yerushalayim. Ki mitzion teitzei sora. In fact, yesterday we read the parsha of Maaser Bechor, which means every tenth animal you have to bring as a korban. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes that the point of this mitzvah, that's called Shor Sheva mitzvah, he goes into the philosophy of the mitzvah, very speculative, but he says it was to make sure that the people would come to Yerushalayim. This was another way of guaranteeing that they would come to Yerushalayim for the mitzvah of Bechor. Why was it so crucial to get the people from the corners of Israel into Yerushalayim? Because that's where they studied Torah. And even though it would be the head of the household, he would study Torah in Yerushalayim, and then he would come back to his home, and he would share his Torah with the members of his household. And this is how, in the original plan, they guaranteed the study of Torah. And I found an unbelievable statement that's quoted here in the Otzer Agoda about Yerushalayim. We spoke about the Yofi of Yerushalayim, the beauty of Yerushalayim. We spoke about Yerushalayim as the gates of Tefillah. But here, he tells us something entirely different. And listen to the language of the Gemara in Moed Katan. The Gemara says the following. Arbamios Ushmonim Bate Knesios Hayu Yerushalayim. Back in the day, there were 480 synagogues in Yerushalayim. I think today by far there are much more. But Bechol Echad V'Echad, this is unique.
Hayalo Beis Sefer LeMikra uBeit Sefer LeTalmud.
Unbelievable. We have two Torahs. We have Torah Shebichsav and we have Torah Shebal Peh. Every synagogue back in the day in Yerushalayim had two schools. There was a Beit Sefer for Mikra and a Beit Sefer LeTalmud. So when we say Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sora, what it really means is that in Yerushalayim we're going to go to the Beis HaKnesses, which again I understand why there's a why there's so many Batei Knesses in Yerushalayim, because as we said before, Yerushalayim is the Shar Shalmala, Yerushalayim is the Shar Shamayim for Tefillah. But why does every Beit Knesset have to be endowed with a school, and not just one school, but two schools? And the answer is because Yerushalayim is an integration of both Tefillah and Torah. In fact, I want to quote to you another statement of Chazal. This one is absolutely mind-boggling. It's a Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, and also in Makos. It says, "Bisharach Yerushalayim, mi garam l'raglenu sheyamdu b'milchama." How were we successful on the battlefield? Sharei Yerushalayim shayu oskim ba b'torah. Fascinating. That the study of Torah in the Sharei Yerushalayim is what brought about our success in Milchama. So maybe it makes sense that we divide up the population of Israel, those who go out to battle, and those who clinch the success of that battle, who are Osek B'Torah Kimitzion Teitzei Sora. Again, maybe we've convinced one individual that I know of today, we could have a government. But okay, we won't go into that now. No politics. But look at Yerushalayim now. Yerushalayim now becomes the great integration of Torah and Tefillah, prayer and study. These are the two greatest mitzvahs that we have. The Rambam, you know, codifies the Sefer HaMitzvahs. He calculates in number 11, the mitzvah of Avadatem es Hashem Elokeichem. And the Rambam writes that, what is Avodah? What does it mean to serve Hashem? The Rambam writes, Tefillah, Ezi Avodu Tefillah. That's not a big chiddush. We know that from the Sifri. And then the Rambam found another Sifri that says, Avodah Zu Talmud. And the Rambam integrates both Talmud, the study of Torah, and tefillah, prayer, in one mitzvah. It's two halves of a whole. And it has to be integrated into one indivisible whole. That's what Yerushalayim is. It's the ultimate integration of these two. What else does Yerushalayim give us? And the answer is a special sanctity. How do I know that Yerushalayim generates a special sanctity? I'd like to prove it from two sources. Number one, from a Gemara in Masechet Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis says that not only is Yerushalayim sanctified, but living in Yerushalayim is a special sanctity. And therefore the Gemara says that in the context of a marriage relationship, what we call a ketubah, if one or the other, he or her, says, let's set up our domicile in Yerushalayim, the other spouse refuses, that is cause for divorce. If she refuses, then he's allowed to give her a divorce without paying the ksuba. If she insists on living in Yerushalayim and he refuses, he has to give her a divorce if she wants one, and he has to pay the ksuba. Where do we find such halacha? Only with regard to chutz laretz, right? If she wants to make aliyah and he doesn't, he can compel her and vice versa. But now the Gemara in Ksubis is applying this to Yerushalayim. It must mean that just like Eretz Yisrael has a Kedusha, and therefore each spouse is granted a right within the framework of marriage to set up a domicile in a place of Kedusha, the same thing applies to Yerushalayim. How do I know that Yerushalayim is endowed with a special Kedusha? This is the first mission of Masechta Kelim. The Mishnah sets up 10 levels of Kedusha, and Yerushalayim is listed amongst the 10 levels of Kedusha, and its sanctity surpasses that of Arei Choma, which we read about just yesterday. Arei Choma means walled cities, and a walled city has a special sanctity, but Yerushalayim is by far supersedes, because we can eat kodshim in Yerushalayim, that means Shlomim is eating the basar, or we eat Maisa Sheni in Yerushalayim, or Neter Avai, Maisa Behema. All these are eaten in Yerushalayim, which you cannot eat in a Batei Harichom, a walled city. So you can't eat Kodshim in Yericho, but you can eat Kodshim in Yerushalayim. But that sanctity somehow impacts and penetrates into the heart and the soul of every Jew who takes part in Yerushalayim. Hence, if a Jew says, I want to live in Yerushalayim, he has a right to do so. Then I have another Gemara, the Gemara in Baba Basra. The Gemara in Baba Basra tells us that the Anshei Yerushalayim had a special Kiddusha with special minhagim and mitzvos, and they took upon themselves one chumrah after the other. In many issues, they took the strict view, you know, the high road. Why? Because they lived in Yerushalayim. You see that Yerushalayim impacts on the people who live therein. Now again, I'm not paskining halacha l'maisa here, but it does seem that at least in conceptual terms, in abstract halacha, Yerushalayim takes precedence over any part of Eretz Yisrael. This is codified in the Tshuvas of the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer explains why is it that, I don't remember the year, so you'll apologize. You'll accept my apologies, but I believe it's about 4 centuries ago, there was a massive earthquake in Tzfat.
1837, it was in the time of the Chasam
Sofer. Oh, 1837, thank you. And the Chasam Sofer and many others were trying to figure out what was the sin that led to this terrible catastrophe. And the Chasam Sofer says he believes that when the Jews decided to settle in Tzfat, let's say 5 centuries ago, they ignored Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim was coming to claim its own, you know, and that's what he claims. Again, I don't like to give answers to why tragedies befall, but the Chasam Sofer is a pretty, you know, he's a pretty heavy gunner. Now, other dinim of Yerushalayim, you know, we have to be very careful about how we behave in Yerushalayim. And one of the takanos that the Gemara establishes about Yerushalayim is enosim ginos upardesim, because if you allow for agriculture in Yerushalayim, there's going to be the smell of manure and so forth, you know, all the fertilizers. We have to avoid that in Yerushalayim. Now, wait a second. Here's my question. Why is Yerushalayim different? In halachic terms, I would submit to you that Yerushalayim has a kedusha, it has a sanctity that goes beyond that of the rest of Eretz Yisrael, as we saw with regard to Achilas Kodshim and Maaseh Sheni and so forth. Wait a minute. We have to ask a basic question. You and I know that the Kiddush, the sanctity, the sanctification of Eretz Yisrael, took place in 2 historical periods. One was what we call Yoshua, the first kibush, and the land was conquered, and that endowed a sanctity in the land. That's called Kiddusha Rishona, the first Kiddusha. Then, after Churban, 70 years later, at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, the Jews established the second Kiddusha. Now, the first Kiddusha is Kitshol Ashait of Lo Kitshol Asidlofo. In other words, when Nebuchadnezzar came with his armies and he exiled the Jewish people, at that point, the Kiddush, the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, was null and void. Now, at the time of Ezra, what's called Kiddusha Shnia, we reestablish a new Kiddusha of the land of Israel. So let's think about Yerushalayim. Does Yerushalayim have sanctity today? Well, if Yerushalayim was sanctified at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, let's say the time of David and then Shlomo HaMelech, who built the Mikdash, then that Kiddusha was null and void with the Kibush of Eretz Yisrael when we were sent into exile. Because Kiddusha Rishon HaKidshul HaShaitim Elo Kidshul Asid Lavo. What about Kiddusha Shnia? So this is a great controversy in Masechta Gittin. The Rambam and the Raivit at the beginning of Hilchos Beis HaBechira. What's the status of the second Kiddusha? So if you hold that Kiddusha Shnia, Kiddushal Ashaita, V'Kiddushal Asid Lavo, so Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim have their Kiddusha just as they had it at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah. But what if you paskin like that, Man D'Yomar, that Kiddusha Shnia, Kiddushal Ashaita, V'Lo Kiddushal Asid Lavo, meaning that the Kiddusha of Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim has to wait until the final kibush at the time of the ultimate redemption. So, for example, all these laws that I told you about, you can't make orchards and fields and fertilize ground in Yerushalayim, does that apply today? Because if you hold Kiddusha Shniyah, Kiddusha L'Shaitav, Lo Kiddusha L'Asid Lavo, then it shouldn't apply. So I found something amazing here, mind-boggling, in the Encyclopedia Talmudit. It's number 499. And he says this in the name of the Pa'as HaShulchan. Now the Pa'as HaShulchan was a student of the Vilna Gaon. You know that the Gaon sent his students to settle in Eretz Yisrael. That's why so many of our Ashkenazic Minhagim reflect those of the Vilna Gaon. And he quotes in the name of the Pa'as HaShulchan, and then he mentions a bunch of other poskim who agreed with him, the following. Even if you accept the opinion of Bittel, that means there's a voiding of the Kiddush of Yerushalayim, nevertheless, mikol makom yesh b'yeshivos mitzvah yoser mishar orei Eretz Yisrael, meaning the halacha that he can demand or she can demand that we live in Yerushalayim still applies today. Again, my friends, I'm not paskening here, but listen carefully to the Pa'as HaShulchan. He's saying something that l'chora defies human logic. How can you possibly maintain Yerushalayim as Kiddusha, and you can force the spouse to live in Yerushalayim, and all these takanos apply even bizman hazeh? Is noeg din zev lo enosim voginosu upardesim afilu bizman hazeh? He's going according to the opinion that says kitchel shaita velo kitchel osid lov, which means that the kedusha is batel. And from this, I draw again a revolutionary conclusion. I can't reinterpret this Pa'as HaShulchan in a different way. And that is that there's a certain sanctity or special nature to Yerushalayim that exists even without Kiddusha. And here, let me you know, before you throw rotten tomatoes at me, I just want to tell you what I heard from my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik once, not with regard to Yerushalayim. I just want to apply the methodology here to Yerushalayim. He asked the question of the Minchas Chinuch about the 70 years between Churban Bayis Rishon and the building of Bayis Sheni. What was the status of the land of Israel? Was there no mitzvah to live in the land? For example, we know that there are many, many institutions that can only be instituted in Eretz Yisrael, like Smichas Zakenim and Kiddush HaChodesh and Egla Rufa, and there's a whole list of them. What happened during those 70 years? So he quotes his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. I gave a shiur here on Gimel Shvat. That was the last time I think I was here in memory of Rav Moshe on his yard site. Rav Moshe says the following, that there's Kiddushas Eretz Yisrael, and then there's, he called it, Shame Eretz Yisrael. And again, if you're into the brisket terminology, the difference between Kiddusha and Shame is very fundamental. Shame Eretz Yisrael reflects the essence of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a special country. Kiddusha, that's necessary for certain specific mitzvahs, like Trumos and Maisros and the Matnas Aniyim. But as far as the essential inherent Kiddusha, that Kiddusha of Eretz Yisrael dates back to the time of Avraham Avinu, way before the Kibush of Yoshua. Kumis Aleph Ba'aretz, L'Rachba, and so forth and so on. That generates the shame Eretz Yisrael. The shame Eretz Yisrael is enough for all the special dinim, like settling in Eretz Yisrael and so forth, even without the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, my Rebbe's brother, once had a whole discussion about Eilat and other places that were conquered by the Ole Mitzrayim, meaning at the time of Yeshua, but were not reconquered at the time of the Ole Bavel, and he wants to know, is there a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? You know, some people are very cynical. They hear about their friends who are going on a trip to Eilat, and they say, oh, have fun in Chutzlart. But according to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, at least, that's not Chutzlart. It has a shame Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, the shame Eretz Yisrael will expand at the time of the ultimate Geula. We're not ready for that yet. But if that be the case, perhaps we could say that there are two dimensions to Yerushalayim.
There's Kiddushas Yerushalayim and there's a shame Yerushalayim. The sanctity of Yerushalayim depends upon a Maisa Kiddush. You have to have a formal Kiddush. The Mishnah in Shmuas goes through how they would expand the boundaries of Yerushalayim in order to sanctify them. That's only a formal, technical Kiddush of Yerushalayim that generates Achilas Kodshim and Maisa Sheni and so forth. But as far as the shame Yerushalayim is concerned, the shame Yerushalayim exists even without the Kiddush of Yerushalayim. Otherwise, how can the Pasach Shulchan say that there's a mitzvah of Yerushalayim even Bizman Azeh, when we don't have Kiddush, because he's going according to the Vayde Yomar, the Kiddushal Shaita Velo Kiddushal Asalavo. And then, nevertheless, he says, Yesh B'Yeshivas a mitzvah, and therefore we're gonna settle in Eretz Yisrael. So in the final moments that I have, I want to suggest perhaps, what is this concept of a shame Yerushalayim? What does it mean? Chazal speak, and I could quote to you so many different sources here about a double Yerushalayim. There's Yerushalayim Shel Mala and Yerushalayim Shel Mata. It's a very common, popular theme now for Judaica art, you know, to show a mirror image between this Yerushalayim and Yerushalayim Shel Mala. Yerushalayim is an entity. Yerushalayim is a living being. It's not physical. It's an eternal, infinite entity. So when I say, ask not what Yerushalayim can do for you, Yerushalayim can do great things for you. It could sanctify you. It could give you a mitzvah of yeshiva b'Yerushalayim, and maybe even b'zman hazeh, even if I hold Kedusha Rishon, Kedusha Shidcha, lo kishlas lovo. Yerushalayim is going to give you an opportunity because the gates of heaven are open, even during the summer. And it's going to give you the opportunity to study Torah on the highest level. And I can only tell you, I dedicated most of my life to what they call, you know, the gap year in Eretz Yisrael, where young men and young women come to study after high school. And I can only tell you what the inspiration of Eretz Yisrael has done for myriads of young people who are now the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And without it, I don't know where this inspiration would come from, honestly. There are Baal Tshuva movements in Chutz La'aretz, but there's something very special going on here in the land. And what else does Yerushalayim give me? Yerushalayim gives me ki'ir shechubra lo yachtov, this sense of something that I can almost feel. It's an electrifying inspiration. All this uplifts me and sanctifies me because I live in Yerushalayim. But there's something else, and that is, what can I do for Yerushalayim? What can you do for Yerushalayim? And the answer is that, number one, Shalu Shlom Yerushalayim. David Melch says we have to seek out the peace of Yerushalayim. And the peace of Yerushalayim means the security of Yerushalayim. We all have to take it upon ourselves to do the maximum, whatever we possibly can, to voice our feelings about Yerushalayim in public and in social media and in front of the nations of the world. That's called Shlom Yerushalayim. The Gemara tells us that when you see Yerushalayim b'churbanah, you have to cut kriya, and it's a special kriya. And that anyone who participates in the avelus of Yerushalayim and longs for Yerushalayim b'binyana, to be reunited and established as the center of all Jews, such a person will be zocheh v'ro'ah b'simchasa. He will be zocheh to celebrate the joy of the beauty of Yerushalayim. And number two, Mi Goram Liraglenu Sheyamdu Bimulchama Share Yerushalayim Shiru Oskim BaTorah. That if we learn Torah in Yerushalayim, in the Share Yerushalayim, that Torah study adds an element of Kiddush, of sanctity to Yerushalayim. So what we're doing is we're really creating and recreating Yerushalayim. So we have to dedicate ourselves to the peace of Yerushalayim, for the spirituality of Yerushalayim, for tefillos in Yerushalayim, for Torah study in Yerushalayim, for all our dedication and devotion to mitzvos in Yerushalayim. We owe it to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is calling out to us as a living being. And it's fascinating to think that when Chazal speak about tefillah, they speak about tefillah al Yerushalayim, not be Yerushalayim, but Chazal speak about tefillah al Yerushalayim. Al Yerushalayim means on behalf of Yerushalayim. Well, I understand praying on behalf of myself and my family in Yerushalayim, in the Shar Yerushalayim. But what does it mean to pray al Yerushalayim? And the answer is we're praying for the beauty of Yerushalayim. A beauty that unfortunately is not appreciated by the nations of the world. And unfortunately even here, some of our own brethren don't appreciate the beauty. Because beauty is not just skin deep. It's not just physical. Beauty is spiritual. It's the power of Yerushalayim. The power and the impact that it has on our people. And the ability to join us and unite us together without separating between one shevet and another. And so we have that vision of Yechezkel HaNovi, the dried bones, and we see the children of Yerushalayim, and we think that now the dried bones are coming to life again. Yehi Ratzon, may it be His will, that each and every one of us will not only be inspired by Yerushalayim, but will successfully implement our maximum efforts in whatever way we can for the benefit in Yerushalayim until Amir Tzashem, Bekarov Mamish, will see the rebuilding of Yerushalayim and will be Sameach B'Simchasa Kein Yiratzon.
Amen.
I have this little what happened during the Six-Day War. We were in Argentina, and we lived in an apartment building, and there was a military from Argentina. I mean, anti-Semitic. Of course, he knew we were Jewish. Never, ever said hello to us. After the Six-Day War, big smile.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a great story.